Jesus wore. Oh, when he wore. When Jesus wore. He washed my sins away. Happy day.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about meat and what you may not know happens in your body, University of Texas study. We're also going to look at one single energy drink, according to the Mayo Clinic, can do what? It's not good. Just one single energy drink. Also from Chalmers University, gut microbiota, that's the good bacteria in your gut, regulates antioxidant metabolism. Well, that's new. We didn't know that. Why is that important? I'll share that. An unexpectedly delicious food makes us feel happy, according to this study. I think so. I've seen people at health retreats and even friends who come over for dinner, and I never let anyone know what I'm going to serve. And then you take them out these wonderful, beautiful presentations of vegan foods, and it's a whole lot of joy because it's actually tripping dopamine receptors in the brain where it makes you feel good. It can also, when you're looking at something you like and enjoying something you like, you also stimulate the feel-good hormones, the oxytocin in our body. So why not spend more time making delicious foods, different ones, so every time it's something new, re-stimulating a new energy cycle? I'll talk about that. Also today, we're going to look at how vitamin C halts the growth of aggressive forms of colorectal cancer. This is in the Weill Cornell University Medical Center, and a lot more on health and healing. And keep in mind, I always cite the peer-reviewed literature, the university, because we are the source of reference material all over the world of what's happening that's natural, non-toxic. Also today, I'm going to explore several issues, and I will be opening it up for comment after some of these issues. For example, they want to extend up another pipeline and again carrying oil. So we're going to have a short commentary upon what does it actually mean? How safe are these pipelines? What about the pipelines we haven't heard about, didn't even know were in the ground for 40 or 50 years that are now corroding and leaking? We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about confirming an early report from a couple weeks ago with Professor Guy McPherson and other scientists, climatologists, that the most optimistic is we have 10 years before we begin to see some cataclysmic events on Earth. The trouble is we're not pulling together all the different pieces. But when you pull all the pieces together, and that's what they're doing, then you see it all interconnecting, and you see these interlocking and synergistic feedback loops, and you think, oh, wow, this is not going to come out right for most people on this planet. But that doesn't mean that it has to be cataclysmic for everyone. It doesn't mean everyone will lose a quality of life. It depends upon where you live and what the circumstances are of your environment and whether or not you're in an area where you're going to have a feedback loop. For example, New York City today is going to be warm, but tomorrow's going to snow. That's a huge drop, change in temperature, over 50 to 60 degrees. Now, when that happened 2 years ago in North Dakota, where they went from a very high temperature one day to down around 10 degrees at night, tens of thousands of cattle and horses died because out there, They don't bring them into barns at night. They're out in the field. They're out in the giant pastures, thousands of acres. They just froze to death. And yet it made a little tiny blip in the news and consciousness went away. This morning, New Orleans, whole areas are devastated. Thousands of people had their homes destroyed or been affected by a tornado. Again, it's all around us, but we're not paying attention. Today we will, and we'll show you a news clip from an independent source that has come up with the same predictions from another group of environmental scientists. They're saying 9 years. McPherson said it could start as soon as the Arctic ice is gone, which could be this summer or next summer. Now, it doesn't happen all at once, but it begins. And within a month or two, we're going to see the breaking off of, now it's over 100 miles long and hundreds of yards wide and over a mile deep, of the largest ice shelf to ever break in our recorded history. In and of itself, that will not. That's like having ice in a glass of tea. And the ice melts, you do not increase the volume of water in the glass of tea. So anything that's actually a part of the ocean is not going to raise the ocean by more than probably around maybe 3 or 4 inches, imperceptible. But it's what it's holding. It's holding back those glaciers. And those glaciers will not have that and other ice shelves holding it back. There's no backstop. And with no backstop, we're going to see the glaciers going right into the ocean. And the warmer it gets, on top and bottom, the more it's going to melt, the faster it's going to melt, the faster it's going to calve. And then you're going to see, in a very short period of time, the oceans rising. And as they rise, there goes all your coastal cities in the world, and a lot of farmland, and your aquifers. Salt water's going to go in. So we're putting all this together for you. And most importantly, it's too long to do on a radio broadcast, but within the next 4 weeks, I will be doing a webinar on how to survive with a quality of life all of these disasters that we're facing. And today, I'm going to compare two people. One, this Milo fella who's running around the college campuses, entertaining his audience. They're packed everywhere. And he mainly attracts a more conservative and, I would say, much younger audience. But I find him personally extremely offensive. I don't like his language. I don't like how he does not have to be as vulgar as he believes he is hip enough to be in order to make his points, whether you agree or disagree with his points. And so I decided to watch. Oh, I watched about 3 hours of his lectures and debates, and I'm seeing a pattern in him, and I'll discuss that. But I'm going to play you today a compilation of a person who was far more insightful, far more outrageous, but he was appreciated by both conservative and liberals, and that's George Carlin. And he was vulgar, but he was not pretentious. He was not a narcissist. And I believe that he was the best at what he did of anyone who's ever done it. So maybe Milo might want to take some lessons from George, because you can have some points on your side, but when you alienate a whole group of people and you think that's hip and people cheer you, why don't you try being that other group of people? How does that feel? And he does not have the same ability that George Carlin does. So we're going to play some of George to remind people how screwed up the world is, how warped much of our nature is today, but do it in a way that it makes his point, we laugh at it, and it creates an ability to focus our attention on it. So as you see, we have a lot to share. Now, I'm hopeful that I'll have enough time to invite people to call in and on our talk back and share their points of view. From the University of Texas, diets high in meat may lead to an increased risk of developing renal cell carcinoma. That's kidney cancer. And what do they mean? They mean the cooking techniques such as barbecuing and pan frying. And that's how most people, along with deep frying, that's how they're eating. I got a call and someone says, Gary, turn on the television and look at this particular cooking channel because they're showing you carnival food and every single dish is a disaster, but people love it. And then there's also a program on there that shows you the most popular restaurants in cities around America and every single thing is like deep fried ugh. And so I watched it for about an hour and a half and my friend was absolutely correct. And yet we are popularizing an entire third generation to eat the foods that are not good for us. And meat is at the top of the list because we have this myth that you must eat animal proteins three times a day. Just ask your dietitian, ask your nutritionist, ask your doctor, ask your nurse. Oh yeah, you need meat three times a day because that's the only place you get your animal proteins. You can't get them from vegetables. Wrong. You do not require any animal protein ever in your life to have all the amino acids from a well-balanced diet. If you have pulses and legumes and nuts and seeds and beans and whole grains and starchy vegetables, you're getting all the amino acids you need. And how should I know? Because I'm the scientist that actually did the original study, a landmark study that proved for the first time, conclusively, that all plant-based foods contain amino acids, all 8 essential amino acids, and then the combination by which you eat them, hence a varied diet, gives you all the amino acids that meat would give you and even more, but without the health consequences of shortening your life, like this does. This study was done at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. It was published in the peer-reviewed journal Cancer. Now, if every doctor, every nutritionist, every dietitian got this study, after all, it's a big deal because 60,000 new patients a year will be diagnosed. 14,000 will die because of renal cell carcinoma. We're not talking about a kidney cancer being a non-event. It's a life-threatening event. But they won't. Even if you said that you could prevent a cancer completely by changing your diet, there wouldn't be any emphasis at all because we've already had people like Dr. Dean Ornish show us that we can reverse heart disease, prevent heart disease of all types with diet and lifestyle. Didn't make any difference whatsoever. So we should ask ourselves, why not? What do we need before we're willing to change? And I'm writing a chapter in a book right now about this. And I'm trying to get a handle on that part of our conditioning that resists change, even when it would save our lives or improve our lives or improve the outcome or change circumstances. And I'll share that with you as soon as I've completed that chapter. Also, if you just have one energy drink, you know those little bottles, one energy drink, according to the Cleveland Clinic, quote, drinking one 16-ounce energy drink boosts blood pressure and stress hormone responses in young, healthy adults. This is according to the study that was presented at the American Heart Association Scientific Session. And that triggers cardiovascular events. Researchers studied young, healthy adults with no known cardiovascular risk factors. Each drank just one 16-ounce can of a commercially available energy drink or a placebo in this random study on two separate days. We're not talking about over a year. We're talking about 2 days, 48 hours. And researchers measured participants' blood pressure and blood levels of norepinephrine before and 30 minutes after drinking that. And norepinephrine is your, by the way, it's your fight or flight chemical that increases blood pressure and the heart's ability to contract. And it modulates heart rate and breathing in response to any form of stress. Well, researchers found that in addition to increasing your blood pressure after consuming one energy drink, the norepinephrine levels increased more than twice as much when compared to those who drank a placebo drink. And that is dangerous. So imagine people drinking these every day. Imagine people on Wall Street drinking them throughout the day, especially those who work long hours. Imagine people working night shifts who will have an energy drink because they think, well, you know, I won't go to sleep. And so now you're really putting yourself at risk of heart disease. From the Chalmers University of Technology, a recent study showed that your gut bacteria regulates the glutathione and the amino acid metabolism of your body. Now, glutathione is a key antioxidant. It's found in every cell of your body. And when you're deficient in it, it contributes to oxidative stress, and that in turn leads to a lot of diseases and prematurely ages you. And the functional output and diversity of your gut microbiota are important modulators for the development of various human disorders: obesity, type 2 diabetes, atherosclerosis, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, as well as the opposite end of the spectrum, for example, malnutrition. And so good bacteria means that you're going to produce better outcomes of antioxidants, including glutathione, and bad bacteria, when you've had the alcohol and the sugar and the junk foods, you're not. So, to maximize antioxidant use in your body, to help prevent disease, make sure you're getting some good bacteria. Sauerkraut, the non-dairy yogurts, they all have it. And if you really want something strong, just take any product that has a given amount, preferably 4 billion, with a B, billion or more, probiotics. This was published in Molecular Systems Biology. Also, I mentioned a little while ago that unexpectedly delicious food makes us feel happy. Well, we all know what it's like to take a bite of something, expecting one taste and getting another. For example, when I get up in the morning, I always make some fresh lemon juice, generally the juice of 2 lemons, and I dilute it. And it depends upon what I want to achieve, what I dilute it with. I can dilute it with beet juice. I'm going for a long workout because it increases nitric oxide, and that means your blood flows better through your arteries and veins, and you're going to have a longer workout. Or I could also put it in grape juice. In fact, it's one of those things when I there were some people going to go for a run with me, and what are you taking today? I said, I'm going to take a juice. What? Lemon juice. Lemon juice? Wow. You could see their mouth almost puckering up. So I said, try some. So I gave them each a small amount. I didn't have a lot. I gave them a small amount, probably about 2 ounces each. And it was blended with grapes. So suddenly they had this smile on their face. Hey, this tastes great. Now that meant in that moment, they were actually having a hormone release in the brain. They were having an adjustment in the receptors of the brain, they would feel better. That's what it means to have something that tastes better than what we expected or tastes different than we expected. And that's why we should be introducing more interesting foods into our diet, especially other nationalities. For example, just making all your own infusions of lemongrass and for a pasta. How about instead of basil, which most of the time when people will get it, unless you grow it yourself, is tasteless. How about getting some lime basil, cinnamon basil, lemon basil? You get all these different basils. That's how they're grown. I grow them. And you make an infusion, and then over the pasta, you squirt or squeeze and spray the whole pasta with your infusion. Now suddenly your mouth is tasting something different that it did not expect. So we're all going to be better in how we feel if we add new things into our life. And finally, from the Cornell University Medical College, high levels of vitamin C kill certain types of colorectal cancers in cell cultures. And according to the new study from the Weill Cornell Medical investigators, the findings suggest that scientists could one day harness vitamin C to develop targeted treatments. Now, by the way, just so you understand, colorectal cancer is the third most common cancer diagnosed in the United States, about 93,000 new cases each year, and about half of those cancers harbor mutations in the KRAS and the BRAF genes. These form the these end up becoming more aggressive and generally don't respond well to current therapies. So taking vitamin C at high doses each day can make all the difference in the world. And so that's what I'm suggesting. And by the way, at the Tri-State Healing Center for 10 years, we help more people reverse or improve their cancers with high-dose vitamin C than any other place on the planet. I miss that. I miss going in early in the morning. I would go in and open it up before my long workout, and I would close up at midnight. And people were there 7 days a week. Thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people came in near death and left after a year, year and a half, 2 years, alive and well. So maybe someday when I get through all the current projects I'm doing, I can open a small one again. And by the way, eating more homemade meals may reduce the risk of type 2 diabetes. This is Harvard School of Public Health. So if you eat more meals prepared at home, you can reduce your risk of developing type 2 diabetes. And why? Because more likely than not, when people eat a meal at home, there's more effort made into it. It's more nutritious. And so where the junk food is mainly in the restaurant food, that does not mean people can't eat junk food at home. They certainly can, but less likely to do so. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
When I became of age, my mother called me to her side. She said, son, you're growing up now. Pretty soon you'll take a bride. And then she said, just because you become a young man now, there's still some things that you don't understand.
Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Sometimes I like to do commentaries based upon what I perceive as a limitation or a bias or sloppiness in what the mainstream media is presenting. And specifically, I would like to offer a challenge to Amanpour over at CNN, who's an award-winning journalist and historically, I believe, has done some remarkably good work. And at a time when not a lot of journalists were taking on a lot of the major issues, she did. But just the other day, I watched her where she interviewed a person and was really reprimanding that person who is running for the presidency of France, Le Pen, because she favored cooperating with Putin. Well, first, just common sense and reason. Putin has one of the largest countries in the world. They have more resources than the United States and Europe combined. They have more oil, gas, they have more gold, they have more forests, they have one of the largest forests in the world. They have a small population, only about 135 or so million people, about half the United States. They have a very highly educated population. They're one of the highest educated levels of people in the world. And Putin has raised the standard of living substantially. Now, I am not a fan of Putin. I consider him no better or no worse than most world leaders. He certainly is going to be self-involved, and he is going to be doing what's in the best interest of Putin, but his country actually benefits from it. Putin doesn't need war because whatever he has created, whatever benefits and growth you see in Russia or China would be destroyed. He's fully aware of that. What he wants is he wants the sanctions removed, but the sanctions have actually made his country stronger. When you take something away from someone that was important to them, they have to find another source for that. Now, Russia and China have just signed an agreement a major $100 billion trade agreement. Now, this is in addition to Russia and China signing an agreement where Russia, that has an enormous amount of oil, is selling China, that doesn't have any oil, oil at $20 a barrel. It was one of these massive multi-billion dollar deals. Now they're trading in their own currencies. That is sending up a big signal. Do you really want to have a new Cold War? Do you want to have a hot war against China? You couldn't win it. Because these are not unsophisticated people. They are fully aware of what we are capable of doing and other Western European countries. So they start off, instead of diplomacy, détente, talking, and then seeing what we could do in common. They start off with all these think tank fascists coming forward, talking about why they're a danger, they're a threat, they hacked this, they did that. And she said to the potential president of France, who may or may not become elected in another few weeks, who wants to take France out of the European Union, a good thing. I'm completely opposed to the European Union. I've studied its history. It's a lawless, it's not democratic. It's all about hegemony. But in any case, whether you're for or against Brexit or any of the other countries exiting the European Union, try to understand that you can agree or disagree with someone on given points. Like, I agree with Bernie Sanders on probably 12 or 14 major issues. I opposed him on about 12 or 14 major issues. But at least the world would have been better off had he been president. But Hillary Clinton made sure he didn't, and then he abdicated any responsibility to his young and idealist people. He should have ran on a third-party ticket, but he didn't. So she's saying to this woman, dressing her down, but Russia, you know, broke the law because they invaded the Crimea, and they are a rogue nation, in effect. They're not honoring the rules, the laws. And I'm thinking, surely she's not saying this. Surely. Let me give you a little background that she and CNN are fully capable of doing for themselves, but did not. The Crimea, by the way, was sought by all empires, the Roman, the Byzantine, the Ottoman, the Russian, the British, the French, the Nazis, and the Soviets all wanted it due to its quick access to the Eastern Mediterranean and the Balkans, the Middle East. And the Dnieper River is a major waterway and transport route crossing the European continent, linking the Black Sea and the Baltic Seas. And the Crimea also has natural offshore onshore gas fields. According to the latest census of the Crimea, and that's what's in question, the Crimea, as part of the Ukraine, 84% of the citizens living there are natural Russian in their life. They speak only Russian. 13% are Crimean Tatar and native Tatar, mostly Muslims, who side with Russia because of the white supremacist extremism of the Ukraine. Only 3% are Ukrainian. That in itself should have ended the argument. When she said, but the people of Ukraine sided with Russia, they want to be a part of Russia. Yes, only 3% sided with Ukraine. 3%, 97%. 97% want to be a part of Russia because they speak Russian. They have everything involved with Russia. Now, in 1783, Crimea was annexed by the Russian Empire. And they held it until 1917, the Russian Revolution. Crimea became an autonomous republic within the Soviet Union. And then in 1954, it was transferred to the Ukrainian Soviet Socialist Republic by Nikita Khrushchev, president of Russia, as a means to bring greater unity between Russians and Ukrainians. Then, as now, Crimea was predominantly Russian people. In 1991, with the collapse of the Soviet Union, Ukraine earned its independence, and Crimea became the Autonomous Republic of Crimea, a separate entity. In 1997, because of its stronger pro-Russian population, Crimea hosted the Russian Black Sea Fleet, giving its preference over the Ukrainian naval force in the Russian-Ukrainian Navy base treaty, which permits Russia to lease the base and be there until 2042. But then in 2014, Ukrainian coup occurred to oust the pro-Russian president of the Ukraine, Viktor Yanukovych. Now, here's the main issues that were not discussed about the Ukrainian coup, and that none of the mainstream media will tell you. They all lie about this. Now we're looking at Ukraine. 18% of the population are Native American speakers, Russian speakers. In some parts of the country, Russia remains the dominant language. In a 2006 poll, 39% of Ukrainians felt Russians and their rights were being violated because there was a nationalist right-wing Ukrainian government. In 2014, the parliament repealed the language protection law and declared only Ukrainian would be a state language. Well, what about all the Russians there? Too bad. What about Russians that have been there, their families, for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years? Too bad. One language only. That was the United States is doing. Now the United States, our CIA and State Department, Hillary Clinton, wanted Viktor Yanukovych removed as Ukrainians democratically elected president because he was pro-Russia. He refused a $1.5 billion International Monetary Fund and World Bank loan due to the U.S. conditions that the Ukraine allow NATO weapons directed at Russia installed in its country and easements enabling American firms and financiers to dominate all of its resources. Now, mind you, the Ukraine is a poor country, but rich in natural resources. It's the breadbasket of that whole part of the world. Has some of the best soil in the world. Now, all of these major American companies wanted in there. The seed companies, the genetic seed manufacturers, they all wanted to take up the land and its resources and its forest for natural resource exploitation. They wanted to privatize the country, and that's exactly what Clinton and Victoria Nuland, who was the top person in the State Department overseeing this, and also the loan that the International Monetary Fund and World Bank was willing to give the Ukraine, it had austerity conditions, starting with cutting all the pensions, firing public workers, getting rid of minimum wages of any kind. So Yanukovych later embarrassed the European Union by rejecting membership in favor of joining Russia's Commonwealth Independent States. So what do? When they won't take the money, the loan that would put them in hock and privatize all their resources, we create a coup. How do we do it? U.S. neocons plotted the coup for 5 years. They gave $5 billion to right-wing Ukrainian factions who were anti-Russian. And by the way, how do we know this? Victoria Nuland revealed this in a meeting of the International Business Conference sponsored by the U.S.-Ukrainian Foundation. And WikiLeaks actually has cables from her. On three visits, Nuland met with opposition parties, including the neo-Nazi Svoboda Party and its leaders. And they are extreme fascist, and they belong to what is called the Fatherland Party, Nazis. Later, Senator McCain and Senator Chris Murray of Connecticut, he is, shared the stage with neo-Nazi leader and offered their support. And in 2014, they supported by Poland, Germany, and France, they had their way, they had their coup, and caused a regime change to put a pro-American puppet in place. That's the story that they did not talk about. That's what they could have told you, but chose not to. But I want to go a little further. And I agree absolutely with CNN's reporter on this, people should pay attention to the rule of law. Governments should abide by the rule of law. I agree. So why didn't you, in your position at CNN, give examples of countries that do not obey international law? let me just remind you in case it has skipped your mind. From 1981 to 1991, 10 years, the United States broke the law. We supplied weapons and trainings to Contra rebels in Nicaragua. And over the years, the funding of terrorist groups of Cuban exiles, such as Orlando Bosch and Luis Carreras, occurred in 1980 in El Salvador. The United States and the CIA illegally trained, armed, and supervised through the School of America's terrorist militias responsible for killing 70,000 civilians. In the 1950s, the CIA recruited a small terrorist army of mercenaries under Castillo Armas to invade and create terror in Guatemala. That went on for 40 years and left 200,000 dead, largely indigenous Mayan people. And the use of the war on drugs has been consistently used as a means to fund and arm terrorist groups and nations with terrorist operations, all illegal. And most notable in Colombia, with U.S. arming and funding paramilitary groups to battle drug cartels, these U.S.-backed militias are responsible for 75% of civilian deaths. Then we have what is called the Years of Lead, from the late 60s through the 80s in Italy, with the U.S. supporting right-wing paramilitary groups, and it was all related to Operation Gladio. We also supported, against the rule of law, the funding of Pinochet's militias to rid Chile of socialists and progressives, union leaders, and also the democratically elected President Allende. And then we saw that thousands upon tens of thousands were disappeared, tortured, or killed. That was under Henry Kissinger's watch. In Afghanistan, the U.S. worked with both Pakistan and Saudi Arabia to overthrow Afghanistan's socialist government, and these Wahhabi groups would become then the Taliban. So we created the Taliban. From 1949 to 53, the U.S. and U.K. trained Albanian exiles to incite terror to create chaos in Albania against the law. Also, the U.S. supported Syngman Rhee, a right-wing Korean in exile, and installed him as president of South Korea in 1948, and then started U.S.-supported paramilitary terrorist groups to round up and murder and torture anyone that was in opposition, about 100,000 people dead, against all international law. In the 1970s, documents between Henry Kissinger's and Argentina's foreign minister, Admiral Guzzi, Kissinger supported and offered support for military junta's dirty war. The U.S. bombed Cambodia, illegal, and supported terrorist groups that morphed into the Khmer Rouge that massacred 2.5 million of its own citizens. The U.S. provided $12 million in food to feed the Khmer Rouge soldiers. We supported and participated and funded genocide. In Laos, in 1958 to 1960, the CIA created a clandestine mercenary army of 30,000 out of a right-wing Laotian drug lord's rights to engage in guerrilla and terrorist acts in Thailand, Korea, Vietnam, and the Philippines. We sanctioned it, and he prospered. The U.S. were enablers to the creation of Al-Qaeda and ISIS. In fact, a 2015 declassified Defense Intelligence Agency document from 2012 obtained by Judicial Watch reveals, quote, the Salafists, the Muslim Brotherhood, and Al-Qaeda are the major forces driving the insurgency in Syria. The West, Gulf countries, and Turkey support the opposition, meaning they support these people. So those are just some examples, not all by any means. The illegal war in Syria, the illegal war in Libya, where the U.S. and Hillary Clinton wanted the fall of Gaddafi and the Libyan government. And there was no radical factions in Libya at that time. Now there is. And so we have a lot of illegal activities. But just to top it off here, the Carnegie Mellon University study that from 1946 to 2000, the United States interfered in 81 national democratic elections in other countries, and those were all illegal. All illegal. And so when you look at what we've done around the world, we're the ones who've created this. And I have all the years and days for every one of these and the countries. I can name you Ecuador in 2000, Afghanistan 2001, Venezuela in 2002, Iraq 2003, Haiti 2004, Libya 2011. I could go clear back to the 1800s, actually, and bring you through and show you every single intervention that we have done, all illegal by international standards. So you are right. We should be a country that obeys by the law, but we are not. We are the rogue nation, and because of our power, we set the standards. I'm Gary Nall. Now let's go over and hear from what climatologists are now saying is a likely scenario that could realistically happen when you put all the pieces together and look at all the feedback loops. Please listen.
The Arctic Ocean is heating up at a much faster pace than the rest of the Earth. Temperatures over parts of the Arctic will increase as much as 54 degrees Fahrenheit this month in comparison to previous decades. The scientists who write for the Arctic News blog warn humans could become extinct by the year 2026 if climate initiatives are ignored across the globe. RT's Brigida Santos has the story for us from Los Angeles. Brigida, what's causing such a staggering increase in Arctic temperatures?
Simone, what's causing this is a variety of different types of feedback. Now, for example, when there is a lot of snow and ice, what happens is sunlight reflects back into the atmosphere. But as ice and snow begin to melt, we see the water increasing in temperature because it's absorbing more sunlight. And what this does is it causes temperatures to get closer between the Arctic and the equator. As a result, wind and storm patterns change, as can the direction of sea currents, which only works to pull warmer water and air into the Arctic, and this further heats up temperatures. The most dangerous thing about all of this is that it actually causes methane to escape from the Arctic seafloor into the atmosphere, and that's because carbon is usually absorbed and stored in frozen soil. But as that soil melts, methane is able to escape. And because carbon dioxide emissions don't reach their greatest impact for 10 years after they're released, we've really yet to see these effects. And all of this feedback could raise the global temperature 18 degrees Fahrenheit above pre-industrial levels, all by the year 2026. So without climate action, scientists are now warning that, quote, within just one decade, the combined impact of extreme weather, falls in soil and air quality, habitat loss, shortages of food, water, shelter, and all of the basic things we need to sustain life can threaten most, if not all, life on Earth with extinction. Now, at the end of 2016, temperatures at the North Pole were 8 times higher than average temperature increases across the globe. And this month, in February, the forecast shows that parts of the Arctic Ocean will be 54 degrees Fahrenheit higher than they were between the years 1979 and 2000. And this is something that is shocking for an area of the world that doesn't get a lot of sunlight at this time of year, Simone.
It really is shocking, Brigida. Okay, so we have a clear problem here. Now we need a plan. Do scientists recommend anything?
They do. So, of course, they recommend international climate action, much like the Paris Agreement. However, the problem with that is that at the end of last year, global temperatures were well over the 2.7 degree Fahrenheit guardrail that were set by the Paris Agreement. So the scientists here at the Arctic News blog, who are covering this topic extensively, say that individual nations, states, and governments really need to do their part in setting their own parameters and guidelines for controlling greenhouse gases. They're also talking about implementing something similar to a carbon tax, which they call a feed-bait system. These would be fees that are added to products known to pollute the earth that would then go into cleanup projects. So that's something that they are recommending in order to lower the temperatures and prevent us from an extinction by 2026, Simone.
9 years, not too far away. RT correspondent Brigida Santos, thank you.
Now, keep in mind, they just said 10 years to extinction level. I do not accept that everything will go extinct. That's not possible at one time. But will major people go extinct? Yes. Or have to be resettled? Yes. Will they voluntarily move? No, they won't. And that's important that we understand that. And even today, when I look every day as I do at what is happening with the environment, I see that the Middle East is having its hottest time ever. I mean, we're talking about major Holocene climate experiences, and it's through the entire Middle East. And in fact, just so you understand, the Holocene spans 11,000 years. Not a lot of time as far as the Earth is, but we're now speeding up everything that has happened in the past. So we're going to get hit with a lot of this stuff. And they're saying that, for example, in one country, Jordan, it was so hot this year that they lost over 30% of their crops, especially their wheat crop, which is the basis of so much of their diet, and they're running out of water. So if all these countries are increasing their population, which they are, and the very wealthy never have to worry about clean water and food, which they don't, and remember, they're universalists, they can go anywhere in the world they want, then what about the 99.99% of their population that can't move, have nowhere else to go, or no money to get there? They got to eat. And when you start running out of food, you'll have food riots. How many food riots happened in the last year? How many do you think? I'd like for you to do your research. You'll be shocked by the number. And yet we never hear a word about a food riot in the United States coming from other countries. Now you've got much of Africa is no longer able to plant and have regular crops growing. You have deforestation in South America. And you have our own 20 states that are going so hot and dry, they're unsustainable, including our breadbasket states. So I will be doing a very positive and empowering two-hour webinar in the very near future. We're not posting it yet. And the last one I did was sold out instantly. So we're trying to get a wider bandwidth because I'm expecting thousands upon tens of thousands of people to come on and listen to this because I'm going to show you how to survive no matter what happens. So that's happening. But it is happening. And that's just to give you another update on that. And by the way, not only is that happening, but Fukushima is happening as well. They just registered the greatest amount of radioactivity in the second building ever. Why? We're going to do a special program on that on Friday, where we have plenty of time to do it. Now, we're going to take a break and come back. I just want to, before we do that, I want to share something coming up. Someone reminded me. I'm so busy. And I'll show you photographs of what I'm doing and the counseling of Syrian refugees and everything in the very near future. But I was told, hey, you know, there's Valentine's Day. You could have fooled me. I have no idea when Valentine's Day is. I just don't celebrate any holiday. I just celebrate every day, period. So I put together something with people in the office in New York did. I want to thank Tanya and Glenn and Scott and all of you for doing this. They came up with a nice package, and it's a men's package, and we're going to send it right out. It's going out today. And there's a men's package, and then there's a women's package. And you're getting a great savings on this. Let me just tell you what's in it. For example, in the men's package, you're getting the anti-aging elixir. Boy, does every man need that. And you're also getting men's stuff. Another thing that you need. Now, what's in men's stuff? It took me a long time to blend this so that it had the ingredients that I've seen used around the world in all my travels and the scientific literature that really can impact men. Murapuama. Tribulus, Shisandra, Maca, Ginkgo, Longjack, Nettle Root, Yohimbe Extract, Ashwagandha, Horny Goat Weed, that's a big one from Europe, Eleutherococcus Extract, which is a form of ginseng, plus Panax Ginseng, plus apples and GMO-free soy, as lecithin, bananas, cacao, which is chocolate, oat beta-glucan, and Damiana leaves. It's sweetened with stevia, and it's wonderful chocolate. But I know of nothing, including Rock Hard, that I also created, that does as much for men as men's stuff. So for the women in this audience who have a special man in your life, get them men's stuff, and then see what the changes are. But there's also another one here, and that's the anti-aging elixir, and that's a special blend of the organic apple and mangosteen and tart cherry and pomegranate and acai and nopal and noni and turmeric and ginger and sea buckthorn and ascorbic acid and mango, papaya, pectin, mangosteen, lychee, beetroot, aloe vera, goji, which is wolfberry, elderberry, cranberry, blueberry, kakadu, moringa, baobab, which is one of the oldest trees in the world, and this fruit comes from. These are all fruits. And macai with stevia, and that's it. I mean, wow. This, I believe, is the most single important thing I've ever invented, blended together. And you shake it, you keep it refrigerated, you take one capful, the cap's on the bottle. Now, it will separate because I chose not to add binders and homogenizers and stabilizers. I chose not to do that. So it's a slightly off sweet. It's not sweet. It's not bitter. It's just one level below because of all the special fruits, because they're not all sweet. And but it's organic, it's kosher, it's vegan, it's GMO-free. I mean, it's just, it's perfect. And you just shake it. You got to shake it and put it in a cap and drink it down. And then you drink the anti-aging elixir with the men stuff. Wow. So that's that. Now, for the women, got you a package too. So for the men in the audience, get the women in your life, women stuff. What's in the women's stuff, the powder? Dong Quai, the most important and probably the most used herb in the world for women. D-O-N-G-Q-U-A-I. Just Google it and you'll see all the science behind it. Maca root, nettle root, wild yam extract, ashwagandha, flaxseed, soy isoflavones, sweet potato, blueberries, kale, broccoli, apple, banana, oat bran, and cacao with just stevia sweetening, and guar in it. That's it. Nothing else in there. But what's in there is phenomenal, plus 18 grams of fiber. It is phenomenal for women. So that plus women, you're getting the same anti-aging elixir. And also for each one, we're throwing in one of my dark chocolate bars. This is brand new, by the way. It's vegan, it's gluten-free, it's dairy-free, it's soy-free, it's non-GMO, and it's kosher. And it's delicious. And so you're getting that bar. So I'm going to give you a number to call. And you can go, you go up. I'm sure most of you know how to get up to our website. You can order it right there at any time today that you want. And call 877-627-5065. It's regularly, this package is regularly $172.99. You're paying $99.99. You're saving $73. Dollars. All right, big savings, great package, great for you, and we're going to get it right out today. So call for your Valentine package to the person you care about or to yourself. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Back in a moment, please stay with us.
There's a beat for you. In every toast of wine.
Nice to have you with us, everyone. Now let's listen to George Carlin.
Where are all the bright, honest, intelligent Americans ready to step in and save the nation and lead the way?
We don't have people like that in this country. Everybody's at the mall, scratching his ass, picking his nose, taking his credit card out of his fanny pack and buying a pair of sneakers with lights in them. So I have solved this little political dilemma for myself in a very simple way. On election day, I stay home. I don't vote. F*** them. F*** them. I don't vote. Two reasons I don't vote. First of all, it's meaningless. This country was bought and sold and paid for a long time ago. The shit they shuffle around every 4 years doesn't mean a thing. And secondly, I don't vote because I believe if you vote, you have no right to complain. People like to twist that around, I know. They say, well, if you don't vote, you have no right to complain. But where's the logic in that? If you vote and you elect dishonest, incompetent people, and they get into office and screw everything up, well, you are responsible for what they have done. You caused the problem. You voted them in. You have no right to complain. I, on the other hand, who did not vote, who, in fact, did not even leave the House on Election Day, I'm in no way responsible for what these people have done and have every right to complain as loud as I want about the mess you created that I had nothing to do with. So I know that a little later on this year you're going to have another one of those really swell presidential elections that you like so much. You'll enjoy yourselves. It'll be a lot of fun. I'm sure as soon as the election is over, your country will improve immediately. As for me, I'll be home on that day doing essentially the same thing as you. The only difference is when I get finished masturbating, I'm going to have a little something to show for it, folks. Thank you very much. Barbara Bush's assignment was getting children to read. Remember that? Getting children to read. They figured she had had so much success with George. That she would be a natural to get children to read, which misses the point completely. Not important to get children to read. Children who want to read are going to read. Kids who want to learn to read are going to learn to read. Much more important to teach children to question what they read. Children should be taught to question everything, to question everything they read, everything they hear. Children should be taught to question authority. Parents never teach their children to question authority because parents are authority figures themselves and they don't want to undermine their own bullshit inside the household. So they stroke the kid and the kid strokes them and they all stroke each other and they all grow up all f***ed up and they come to shows like this.
We like war. We like war. We're a warlike people. We like war because we're good at it. And you know why we're good at it? Because we get a lot of practice. This country's only 200 years old, and already we've had 10 major wars. We average a major war every 20 years in this country, so we're good at it. And it's a good thing we are. We're not very good at anything else anymore. Huh? Can't build a decent car, can't make a TV set or a VCR worth. Got no steel industry left, can't educate our young people, can't get health care to our old people, but we can bomb out of your country, all right. Especially if your country is full of brown people. That's our new job in the world, bombing brown people. Iraq, Panama, Grenada, Libya, you got some brown people in your country. Tell them to watch. Bomb them. But when's the last white people you can remember that we bombed? Can you remember the last white? Can you remember any white people we've ever bombed? The Germans, those are the only ones. And that's only because they were trying to cut in on our action. They wanted to dominate the world. That's our job. And you probably noticed I don't feel about that war the way we were told we were supposed to feel about that war, the way we were ordered and instructed by the United States government to feel about that war. My mind doesn't work that way. I got this real moron thing I do. It's called thinking. And I'm not a very good American because I like to form my own opinions. I don't just roll over when I'm told to. Sad to say, most Americans just roll over on command. Not me. I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. Nothing. Zero. Nope. And I don't take very seriously the media or the press in this country, who in the case of the Persian Gulf War were nothing more than unpaid employees of the Department of Defense, and who most of the time function as kind of an unofficial public relations agency for the United States government. So I don't listen to them, I don't really believe in my country, and I gotta tell you folks, I don't get all choked up about yellow ribbons and American flags. I consider them to be symbols, and I leave symbols to the symbol-minded.
That was just a small touch of George Carlin. Now, I play that for a simple reason. If you have not heard yet about this Milo fella, you probably will. He is doing more lectures and performance. He's a comedian. But he says some things that I personally find very offensive. Do I believe he should be censored? Absolutely not. Do I believe that we can disagree with someone and find what they say or how they say it offensive, but still respect their right to say it? You bet. In fact, in some of the debates, if the people who were debating him were better prepared, they could have brought this up. I'll give you just one example. He's against lesbians. He also hates feminists. He uses his gayness, and he acknowledges this in a couple of the shows. He acknowledges he can say anything because he's gay, and I don't believe that I know an awful lot of gay people who have morals, manners, and sensibility and etiquette. They can make their point. They do not need to be vulgar about it, and they do not need to demean anyone in the process. This Milo guy seems to be extremely mean-spirited, and it's all about him. That's my impression. It's my opinion. He's an extreme narcissist. And also, if you notice, George Carlin doesn't tell you to go left or go right. He simply looks at what's wrong with everything and everybody, and he points it out. And it's never about him. It's about what he has observed. And then he lets us make up our own mind. We can laugh at him, or we can find, you know, it doesn't relate. But and it's not that he is polite with the words. He is not. He curses a lot. But he takes things to a deeper level in his examples. He lets us see some of our own absurdities. He puts a big mirror up to us. It's how you do that. If you put the mirror up as if I'm going to taunt you, I'm going to embarrass you, I'm going to humiliate you, I'm going to shame you because I feel I have a right to do that because in this moment I'm popular, well, that's unfortunate. That just shows, in my opinion, a lack of civility and a lack of real, genuine creativity, because the really funny people, the really smart people on issues, they don't have to offend an audience in order to make their point. You understand what that means when you watch one of Milo's routines and he goes way overboard in offending people, in my opinion. And yet, I do not believe that he should be censored. I do not believe that he should lack his freedom of choice, because sooner or later, there's going to be someone out there who's going to debate him, and then you'll see what I'm talking about. I just wish the people who have come forward, the students or the people who have debated him, just done their homework first. I'm Gary Noll, and I want to thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone. Dip it, 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 dip it